everybody, and welcome back to Dual Screens Crossplay Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, not as always, that's right, Andy's gone. He's not here. And this might be, I think, the first episode I've done without him. I'm pretty sure. At least of this
you
type
feel
of
lonely?
Show. Not really, because I have you here. That's right. Oh, I have Taylor Allen here. Hi, Taylor.
Hi, hello. I'm great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. This should be a good one. I think we're gonna have a good time together.
I agree.
This is
I'm
gonna
excited.
Be nice. Yeah. We have a lot of news, a lot of weird news, strange news, mm-hmm. but like kind of important news. But also I played a lot of games this week. A lot of games.
Me too.
But folks, if you're new here, let me explain to you what the hell is going on here. This is Dual Screens Crossplay, the internet's number one gaming news podcast starring people you've probably never heard of. Probably. The show posts each and every Tuesday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, Podbean, and of course on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, what's the other one? Apple Podcast?
There we go. The big one.
Just all of them, you know? And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a 5-star review. It helps the show tremendously. And if you're watching later on youtube.com/dualscreenstv, please hit the thumbs up and hit the subscribe button. We are on the march to 1,000. We need 1,000. We need 1,000 so we can legitimately make like 15 cents a video. So do it. Get us there. We're almost there. Not really. We're more than halfway there. And if you want to watch the show live, just go to twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams, hit the follow button, and we go live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. to do this show and some other content later during the year. So do that. It's a lot of fun. We love you. What else? We have another show on the same feed. We don't do it live on Twitch, but you can find it on Dual Screens TV on YouTube, and you can find it on this same podcast network. You don't have to go anywhere else, and that's the Dual Screens Podcast. That's our interview show where Andy and I interview industry guests, programmers, creators, solo devs, teams, publishers, voice actors, and we have some great shows lined up for you in the next month or so. So check that out, and please leave us a review for that show as well. And if you want to support us on Patreon, it's very simple. Just go to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers, Colton the Apprentice Nestler, Vegas Girl on Fire, FNH Paul. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. So thank you so much for supporting us as always. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for everybody's favorite current shirt that you could get on dualscreens.com/store. The Adventures in Gaming. Taylor, what have you been playing?
Steve, I need you to do me a favor. Chat's screaming right now. I need you to check your mic levels and make sure that they're okay for the recording. And if they are, then we're chilling. But if they're not, we may need to do that intro.
I mean, I'm not spiking. So that's good. I'll lower myself anyway.
BP Dub says, Steven, you're at a 21 or at a 22. I need you at an 8. So
turn you down. All right. How about that? Anyway, what have you been playing?
About that. So as I said on the show last week, I just got a PS5.
That's correct.
And so I actually played video games on the PS5.
I'm very excited for
you. Played some old stuff. I played some new stuff. We'll start with the old stuff because that'll be quick.
Sure.
I got the itch for trophy hunting again.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So I downloaded MLB The Show 20 mm-hmm. because I had two trophies that I could knock out in one game versus the CPU right. to get the platinum. So I did. I downloaded
What did you have to do?
I had to hit 3 home runs in an inning, and I had to play a game against the CPU and score a run in every inning, including the 9th inning, which means I had to be the away team.
I hate their trophies. I really do hate MLB's trophies.
Yeah.
I think they're honestly
this
the
year
worst.
Was the most doable in a long time, but they're historically very bad.
Yeah.
But I downloaded the game, played that one game against the CPU, turned all the sliders up, so I was just getting meatballs down the middle.
Sure.
Steven, I finished this game with a score of 54-0, and yeah, I threw a perfect game.
That's one way to get
it. It was amazing.
Yep.
So I got the platinum and then immediately deleted the game off my hard drive.
Sure. As one does, yep.
I have been playing some more Diablo 3 on console because I'm 3 trophies away from getting the Diablo 3 plat.
Okay.
I just have to do 500 bounties. I'm at 108 right now, so it's going to be a little bit, but that's one of those that I can just like mindlessly play as I'm leveling up my characters to get 6 to level 70. I can just do bounties to do that, so knock out all the birds with one stone there.
Right, why not?
And then I downloaded Persona 5, Final Fantasy 15, and Days Gone, but I have not really started those yet.
Sure.
So I'm planning on getting to those at some point. But the new things I've played, I told you in the pre-show, there's a game that I played on the PS5 that I am in love with.
Okay.
And you would think that it's Demon's Souls, our missing co-host so graciously gave to me. Mm-hmm. But
how did he give
it's
that to you?
Astro's. He just sent me a code. It's Astro's Playroom. Steven, this game is amazing. I am obsessed with it. It is so adorable.
Yeah.
All of the like cute little like call outs to PlayStation history. It's a perfect game. It really is. I want to keep playing it. I've already beat the game in one sitting and I'm going back and getting all the trophies and finding all the collectibles and punching all the little robot boys. But that game is so much fun to play. Mm-hmm. It's honestly just a joy.
It plays really well. I think that it's kind of understated how tight it controls and how well the systems really play with each other. I really hope that they do something with this, because like this could be what Little Big Planet never was.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Little Big Planet became something else, became like this game maker. It basically Little Big Planet became Dreams instead of Little Big Planet becoming PlayStation's Mario. It became its own like engine almost. And I think that this little bot could really churn out some really good platformers. I don't know. I mean, and I'm not a big platformer guy, but I really did enjoy it. There was one world I did not enjoy. It was the first one I did.
Really?
Yeah. It was one where you had to like float through like obstacles using the jets or whatever. I'm just not a fan of that control scheme. Once I got through it, I was like, okay, I'm good with that. But yeah, it was a pretty damn good game. I agree with you. Have you started Demon's Souls?
I have, yeah. So I've been playing quite a bit of Demon's Souls as well. That game is gorgeous. That game is so pretty looking. It amazes me that a PS3 game could look that good. And I'm having a lot of fun with that too. You can tell, as someone who started playing like Soulsborne games with Bloodborne and then went back and played Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3. Even 3 came out after Bloodborne, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Bloodborne was my first one.
Bloodborne was a lot of people's way into that style of game. Like I played Demon's Souls when it first came out because everybody was talking about Demon's Souls. Like it was, I used to hang out at a video game store called Play and Trade here in New York. It's since closed down. It became 8-Bit and Up, I think, is the name of the store now. But and who knows if that's still around. But I used to hang out there all the time because I worked right by the store. And I remember when that game came out, everyone in the store was playing it. They were like, you got to get this game. If you like RPGs, you got to get the game. And in my head, RPGs were something very different than that. And so when I got it, I was like, what the fuck is this? This is horrible. It's horrifying. Like, but as I kept creeping forward and I started to like, I played a little bit and then I would go back to the store and I would say, I don't know why. And they're like, oh, did you know that you could do this? I'm like, wait, what? Like, this is like the internet really didn't blow up with coverage of this game yet. So it wasn't like that yet, but I would go to the store and be like, did you do this? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I went back and the most vivid memory I have of it. And when I really thought that the game was awesome was, and I never beat it. I didn't get very far at all, but because it just became too challenging for me, but I could tell how awesome it was. There's a section of the game where you're walking from like a either a castle or like an entrance to a castle or something across a like a elevated path, and then there's like another tower across from you, and this big fucking dragon flies over your head. And it swoops down, and you could kind of just run away from it, whatever. You're not supposed to fight the thing. But they said that if you crouch on the bridge and you look in the direction it goes, and as soon as it flies over you, you shoot an arrow, and you do that for 4 hours at level whatever level you are, you could kill the dragon. And I shit you not, my friend, I shot that dragon until it died. And then got down, went to the dragon's nest where the dragon's usually sleeping, and it was dead. And there was so much loot. And I was like, holy shit, you could do anything in this game. And I missed Dark Souls, and I was like, oh, that, I can't. Those games are too hard. And but Bloodborne got me back into it. And I really wish I would have beat Bloodborne too. But I just hit a wall with those games that I get too frustrated and I just never go back to it. But go ahead, continue your thought.
The biggest downfall, I think, for this game, absolutely beautiful, controls amazing, really fun to play. I like that it's a new experience in that type of world. But the quality of life stuff that they added with Bloodborne and then especially with Dark Souls 3 are severely missed here. I miss how streamlined those games felt. You know, being able to fast travel between bonfires and stuff like that in Dark Souls 3, and you know, just those little quality of life things, being able to like sell off extra inventory that you have for souls so that you can use that to upgrade yourself. Like, you can't do that in Demon's Souls at all. So that's kind of frustrating, but
I could see how that would be
not enough to like hamper my experience with the game at all.
Because don't they kind of balance that in a different way? Like, don't they, like, because you can't get souls by selling off items, I feel like the leveling in that game was a lot faster. I could be misremembering it, but I remember gaining levels pretty quickly in that game, especially if you use a magic caster. Like, the mage cloud or whatever it is, they're broken in that game. Like, if you go mage, it's like, you can't lose in that game. Because everything is ranged at that point. And I remember going for the ranger or whatever it was. I forget. It had to have been a ranger. It was whatever had the bow and arrow. And that made leveling a lot easier too, because you didn't have to get all up in anything's business. You just had to dive away if they snuck around a corner and stuff. I want to get into that game, but I want to be Bloodborne first. I want to get back into Bloodborne. What else have you been playing? Anything else?
Those are the big things. More of other stuff that I've talked about previously, and then some secret stuff that we'll talk about on Game Pass or Play eventually when that show isn't cursed.
Isn't broken. Right. Yeah. So I played three games, new and old games, but games I've never played before this week. The first one I played was Loop Hero, which is new. And I know you spoke about it last week, and I finally dove into it, and I could not stop playing. Legitimately could not stop playing. I have had opportunities where I knew I was strong enough, but I just didn't want to chance it because I wanted to level up. I wanted to build something in the town. So I was like, I have enough materials. I could leave now, you know, do the thing. But if you guys don't know what this game is, listeners, viewers, it is like I'll use the word perfect combination of roguelite, RPG, deck building, and world building. I feel like all of it is perfect. It's put together in such a perfect way that it's terrifying, because you can get completely sucked in and lost in this game. The whole premise is you're like, the world is darkness, and the only thing in front of you is this path, and the path loops around and around. As you're fighting enemies, you're getting loot. You attach the loot based on your class. Like, some classes can only have certain loot on them. For example, the class that you start with is a warrior. It could have a shield, a sword, a chest, armor, and I believe
the ring.
That's right. So you find these armor that you get a little bit better. You go around, but you also find these cards, and They are things that you could build around the road, or you could build them on the road. And the things that you're going to be putting in there are things that spawn enemies or things that get you resources and stuff like that. So as you're looping around, you're making the loop harder for yourself, because the harder you make it for yourself, the more rewards you will reap when you complete a loop. And then when you retreat back to the town, you lose, I think you keep only 60% of the things that you were able to gather, like all the resources. I assume when you beat a boss, you keep 100%, but I don't know, because I haven't tried to yet.
So if you retreat back to town when you're not at your campsite,
mm-hmm.
you keep 60%. If you die, you keep 30. Right. If you retreat at a campsite, you keep 100%.
Oh, so, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, you got to do that. You hold down the retreat button and it'll automatically prompt the retreat when you're at your campsite. You got to do that, Steve.
I'm wondering if... okay. So yeah, there's that. And then when you get to town, you use the resources to build up the town, your forge, your kitchen, your whatever. And then as you're doing those, they unlock benefits to you for your next loop. So like one will unlock the rogue class, which I now have been using, and I absolutely love the rogue class. It's all about speed and it's awesome. And then, but you also loot differently as a rogue too. The gameplay changes drastically based on the class you are. So it's not like you're just getting different weapons. You're doing things completely differently. The rogue doesn't pick up loot. The rogue picks up trophies. And then when you complete a loop, you trade in those trophies and then you get loot. So you're not constantly, you're not constantly switching your weapons. You're only switching it as you start a loop. It's just, it's so addicting to play this game.
I play it during work meetings because it's so easy to just like kind of half pay attention and half pay attention to my meeting. Don't tell my boss that I do that. But I have loop mirror going here. While
and
I
if they're watching here the now, day. they heard nothing.
And yeah, true.
He's a good boy and he still gets
be cool. Be cool, chat.
I also play Don't Die Minerva, which is still in early access, but I got a code for that game in like late 2019. It is a roguelite action RPG. And I really, really liked it because it does what I like in a rogue game, where it doesn't wipe out everything. It wipes out your abilities and your items, but the things that you unlock, the permanent power-ups, stay with you. And there are a lot of them. Like, you could consistently upgrade your power-ups based on these gems that you find, which is kind of like the blood currency or whatever you want to call it. But like, there's these gems that you collect and stuff, and it's really cute. It's very Nightmare Before Christmassy, but a little bit more vibrant, kind of like a Saturday morning cartoon set in Halloween time. Like, if that makes sense, that's kind of how it feels. But it's really cute. Your main weapon is like a flashlight, and you know, you shine it on the ghouls and ghosts and to kill them. And you find teddy bears and other stuffed animals that were Minerva's stuffed animals, and you use them as like weapons. You could get a teddy bear that sits there, and anything that comes in its area, it'll slam it. It's a lot of fun. I think it needs some polish, just some basic, like, it seems like some sounds are missing and that it's got some dead air, if that makes sense. Like, some cutscenes just take a little too long to like get into. Not loading, but just like the way it's shot is weird. But yeah, it's a fun game. And if you like roguelite and action RPGs, I think you would have a good time with it. And lastly, I played Monster Crown, which was a guest of Dual Screens Podcast and an upcoming guest, a re-guest, which is a Pokemon-like monster tamer game with 100% full monster breeding, meaning any two monsters can create a new monster. Kind of like Jade Cocoon, if you remember that game back in the day, PS1 and PS2 days.
Was that the one where you put the disc in and it spawned a new monster?
I think that was Monster Rancher.
Monster Rancher, you're right.
Yeah, I think that was Monster Rancher. But it, so the game is, that's another game that just is like missing some things. It's still in early access and one person is making it. Well, one person is programming it. And then there's one person doing the art and animations. And I believe there's one person doing music. Mm. They may have grown the team since then because they had a successful Kickstarter campaign and all that stuff. But it is a love of labor that you can see so much thought was put into this by people who grew up playing Digimon and Pokemon, where they were like, yeah, well, what if this? Well, what if that? It's a grown-up story. There's some swear words in it. It's the world is vastly different than a Pokemon. In this world, monsters and the humans have this kind of understanding with each other. Like monsters will absolutely eat a human. Like they don't, like they'll destroy you. But if you can show them that you're worthy by being stronger than them or beating the shit out of them or showing you them that you're brave, much like, you know, lowering their HP and to catch them in a Pokeball, you mm-hmm. have them sign a contract with you, an agreement to be part of your team. And like the canon there is that eventually when they fulfill their contract, they will leave, but I don't think they'll leave you in the game. But they might, because breeding is so important in the game. You might say, hey, this guy that I've been using that's really powerful is going to leave me. I should breed him, carry some of his stats over, and then like start over. You know, whatever. But it's really good. I came into a glitch that where I've been talking to them about because I lost my starter for some reason. And I think I know when it, I think I know when it happened. But I digress. It's in early access. I think it's like $13. So totally worth it. Mm. If you're looking for something new, and interesting, just, you know, give it a shot if you're interested. All right. We spent a lot of time on
Pokemon.
That,
but that's okay. Pokemon like games are flourishing right now and I love to see it.
As they should.
Maybe it'll light some fire under the Pokemon company's ass.
I mean, the Legend is cool. Something special. I think Legend is going to be really something special.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Oh, and Andy has been playing indie shit.
Yes. That's
his
what he
only
has
note from him.
Indie shit. So. Speaking of indie shit, let's go to the indie news report because this is a pretty big one. This comes from Polygon. Warcraft and Starcraft co-creator Chris Metzen is building a new world in Dungeons and Dragons. Ouroboros Coil of the Serpent is the name of it, and it's coming to Kickstarter April 20th. So former Blizzard executives, they created Warcraft, Diablo, Starcraft to life. In 2020, after Metzen wrapped a 22-year stint at Blizzard, they announced a new company called Warchief Gaming. Now they're ready to announce the company's first project. Together with lead developer Ryan Collins, a former game designer on Hearthstone, they're turning Metzen's homebrew Dungeons and Dragons campaign, one that began with his childhood friends in the 80s, into a version compatible with the modern 5th edition of Dungeons and Dragons. So, okay, so they're taking his homebrew, and they're taking 5th edition D&D, which you and I have been playing, and they're creating a video game on it.
Yeah. Steve. They're tapping in to like two of three big nerd fandoms, right? They're getting the D&D nerds and they're getting the Blizzard nerds.
Right.
And they're fusing them together in this beautiful project that's going to break every Kickstarter record known to man. Like this is going to do insanely, insanely
well.
Hold on. I'm actually very excited for this game.
This is a source book. Hold on a second. The first source book.
Oh, is it tabletop?
Is this tabletop? Hold on a second.
Buzz Killington says tabletop.
Hold on, I'm continuing to read. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be tabletop. That's even better.
Hmm.
That's even better.
Interesting.
Oh, my. Yeah, essay books. Okay.
I personally am less excited now.
Well, I mean,
as long as
a lot of those homebrew stuff, they add mm-hmm. so much to the game. They're so much fun to play.
Sure.
You just have to find people willing to do it, like willing to actually jump into the game. A lot of the people that buy these books are the DMs that are going to run the game. And I'm not one of those. Like, I buy the books because I want to play the game, but I don't want to run it. So unless a DM I know picks up this game, I'm probably not going to have a chance to play it, but I'll definitely pick it up. I love modules. Especially if they fit in well with the fifth edition core books that I have already. I'm down with that. All right.
A lot of video game acumen behind this.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe video game one day.
Yeah. Who knows?
We'll see how it goes.
Making a tabletop game is a whole new beast.
Yeah.
But I digress. Let's get into the dual screens report. Taylor, why don't you take it away with one of your two stories? Pick one. Start us off.
Sure. I actually put three on there.
Okay.
Believe it or not, Andy isn't here, so I took one of his slots.
That's fair.
I'm going to lead with the breaking news because this came out minutes before the show.
Oh, my. Let's do it.
Cyberpunk lead gameplay designer leaves CD Projekt Red.
That sounds about right.
This just came out. And is a continuation of our ongoing story about how Cyberpunk 2077 is a shit show. Andres, I'm gonna butcher this. Oh. Zawadowski.
Mm-hmm.
Zawadowski. Mm. It's Polish. I don't know. Started specifically with Cyberpunk in 2016. He became the lead gameplay designer. He has been with CDPR for over 8 years,
mm-hmm.
And is now leaving. So, bad news for sure.
Is it bad news?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I definitely think it is.
I feel like the gameplay is done, right? Like,
you don't think that he's a part of this like overhauling that they're trying to do?
I think all of that's engine. I don't think that's gameplay. Like, the gameplay systems are done. Like, I don't think he's got much else to do. I mean, the fact that he's leaving CDPR is a problem, right? Because, like, they have other games, like, that he could contribute to.
Yeah.
But as far as Cyberpunk in general, I think his job is well finished. Like, they're not going to change gameplay systems at this point.
Maybe they should.
Like, he's not the games director. He's not, like, the lead programmer. He's not, like... I don't know.
Sure. I understand the majority of the issues on that game are technical, but
it's not a good look.
It still bodes not well.
Like when I look at that game now and I'm like, oh, I can't wait for that to come out, but should I be excited for that PS5 Series X version? Like the official version? Should I be excited for that? I don't know.
I don't know if I'm gonna pick this game up again. Honestly.
Yeah. I'm very on the fence. I'm very like, I want to play a game like that, but I almost feel like I'm probably better off just playing Fallout 4 or The Outer Worlds or by the time this game's playable on PS5, The Outer Worlds 2, you know, just whatever.
Starfield.
I'll play Skyrim again. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I'll get my fix somewhere. Yeah. That's sad. That sucks.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree.
All right. Let's see. Where are we going to go? Okay. This was an interesting one. This had everybody's balls in a twist.
People are up in the air about this one.
Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft is in talks to buy Discord for more than $10 billion. This comes from Bloomberg.
It's a big price tag.
That's a B, by the way. Yeah. Billion with a B. Microsoft Corp is in talks to acquire Discord Inc., a video game chat community, for more than $10 billion, according to people familiar with the matter. Discord has been talking to potential buyers, and software giant Microsoft is in the running, but no deal is imminent, said the people, who were asked not to be identified because the discussions are private. Discord is more likely to go public than sell itself, one person said. So that's interesting. Representatives for Microsoft and Discord declined to comment. VentureBeat reported earlier on Monday that Discord was engaged in sale talks. So there's a lot of interesting writing on the wall here. This definitely speaks to Microsoft's playbook of doubling down on services and bundling as much shit as possible in their Game Pass service. Being able to use a Discord or a high quality, like maybe they can use it so that Discord's integration into Xbox Live is seamless. So if you and I are, if I'm playing on Xbox and you're playing on PC, you could go on Discord, but I could just go on, be on my Xbox and I could just join your Discord, you know, sir, whatever, through Xbox or something like that. Some sort of integration like that. Also, I don't know why people think this. Let's make something very clear. This isn't an Xbox acquisition of Discord. This is a Microsoft thing. Skype is garbage. That's Microsoft's like thing. And then Teams also, I hate, is garbage. Nobody likes Teams. I think this is more of a reaction to the success of Zoom than it is of anything Xbox related. Anything game chat related. I think
Xbox will get a mild benefit. Maybe there will be an Xbox app for Discord.
I think
you'd mentioned, but this is not an Xbox focused acquisition whatsoever.
Yeah, I think this is more of a business Microsoft thing. Like, you know, the solutions that they have had for what Discord does is terrible. From a mainstream perspective, you're not spending $10 billion on Discord, unless you're using that for a much wider usage. That's fine. I think this is a, great move for Microsoft in general, not even speaking about Xbox. I think the potential that Microsoft could license it out to, you know, make up some of that cost to a Sony, to a Nintendo, to whatever, to be the place where people communicate to, you know, on their consoles, would be dope as well. But right now you could kind of get around all that stuff with just your cell phone. So I don't know. We'll see how they plan on implementing it. I think it's, like I said, I think it's just going to be a video and audio service tool.
Yeah. You kind of got to this a little bit when you were reading the article, but it sounds like this is much more like Microsoft is kicking the tires than they're in like serious negotiation.
Yeah. It's got to make sense for the people of Discord, because if they go public, I doubt they're valued at over $10 billion. I highly doubt that. They're probably closer to what, 2 billion, maybe, if that, like maybe 1 billion. But a lot of times they sell for much higher because it's longevity. You're going to make money from long term if you buy a company like that.
That price tag is insane, though. For context, Microsoft acquired all of ZeniMax Media for $7.5 billion.
Right.
Like $10 billion for Discord is way bigger price tag than I would have ever guessed.
And they are a subscription model too. They're not an advertising model, which is not attractive to investors.
Yeah.
So that could be why they're kicking the tires around for a sale too. Because maybe they're nervous that if they go public and they don't have a advertising model, that their valuation would be much lower than they would hope it would be.
Sure.
And if you're looking to get out of the game and just, you know, make a bunch of money, $10 billion is good.
$10 billion, always good.
Because nobody hates crazy money, though, except for Sony. Sony apparently hates money and their history. Taylor, take this next story away.
Sure. So PS3, Vita, and PSP stores are permanently closing in just a few months. So obviously not a lot of people buying games on those storefronts already. A source familiar with the situation and then later verified states that the stores are going to be closing down starting in July. PSP and PS3 stores are closing July 2nd, while the PS Vita store will stay open until August 27th. After that, you'll no longer be able to buy digital copies of games or DLC. The biggest thing people are worried about here, because there hasn't really been a lot of clarity from Sony around this, is what does this mean for games that you already own on those platforms? The storefronts are going away. Will you still be able to download those games? Are you going to have to download them on a hard drive if you want to keep them? Like, what is this going to do? And since there really hasn't been a lot of word from the team over at PlayStation, there's a lot of concern and confusion around this move. Steven,
yeah.
When was the last time you bought a game on your PS3?
Probably Final Fantasy VII Remake.
On your PS3?
Oh, no. You said, I'm thinking PS4. PS3 was... Yeah. Wait, I know this answer. Shit. What was it? I don't remember, but I remember it was after PS4 came out, and I don't remember why.
Okay.
I went back. But regardless of any of that, I think that this is a Sony PR thing that is a problem, because I don't think this is an issue at all. And not for the same reasons that you're alluding to. I don't think it's because nobody's using it, because I don't think that's fair. I think there were, I don't know, like shutting something down.
The Vita is probably the biggest hit here.
Yeah. Like people
of those three, yeah. Like people still buy and play their Vitas a lot.
Yeah. But also the PS3, if you have a launch one like I do, like you could buy PS1 and PS2 games and run them natively. Sure. So like there's that too. But I think that this is more likely going to lead to them having a ubiquitous store. I think that this has a lot less to do with them moving on, shutting things down and whatever. And it's more... I hope they are bringing things to one main storefront, because like when you go, like they're all different. They all suck. They've never been good. You know, there has to be a better way to do this. So that's what I'm hoping. And that's what I would figure is happening, especially because they're doing all three of them. It's not like they're like, hey, this one, you know, it's the PSP. We haven't made a game for that in years. They're still making Vita games. Like Vita games are still coming out. You know, a few of them a year are still coming out. And they stopped producing the carts in Japan, as far as what I remember, like last year or the year before. You know, it would be a problem for people that, you know, especially are you know, buying their Vitas now. I know one of our listeners just imported a Japanese Vita, and like, you know, that would suck to lose all of that. But there's also other ways you can do it. Like you can go on, does that mean that the Vita, PS3 and PSP stores are down across all, like across even like the PS5? Like can you search for those games on your PS5, download it and send it to your other consoles? Like there could be ways to work around it. And that's why I think it's a disaster for them PR-wise, because like, just get ahead of this shit. Like, you know the questions people are going to ask. You know how the audience reacts when something like this happens. Like, get ahead of that. Figure that out. Have your messaging, you know, ready to go. And answer these questions before they're asked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
All
right.
Okay.
What do we got? What do we got?
Oh, yes. Tell me about this this Nintendo thing.
Oh, yeah. So this is interesting because of the much rumored Switch Pro, quote end quote. Nintendo looks like they may turn to Nvidia's DLSS chip for better graphics on the rumored Switch revamp. Earlier this month, rumors surfaced that Nintendo plans to release a revamped Switch console sometime later this year. Now, a new report is claiming that Nintendo may leverage NVIDIA's DLSS tech to help support better graphics. So far, info regarding Nintendo's upcoming Switch revamp has been relatively light on details, with planned upgrades largely revolving around the move to a higher quality 720p AMOLED built-in display, and support for 4K video output while docked. Now, according to sources who spoke to Bloomberg, it seems Nintendo is also planning to rely on new or refreshed NVIDIA processor with possible support for NVIDIA's DLSS tech to deliver higher quality graphics. DLSS is deep learning super sampling. It's an advanced graphics rendering process that typically renders graphics at a lower resolution and then uses AI and other techniques to upscale graphics to a higher resolution, thereby reducing the performance hit needed to produce high definition graphics. That's the short of it. It also boosts frame rates by as much as 75% to 100%. Which, as we know, is a big deal with the Switch even now. Even when it was just a couple of years old or a year or two old, it was, you know, it struggled to run some of its games over 30 frames. So, I mean, that would be pretty cool. I don't know. Like for me, this is like one of those, this is one of those things that there's probably a lot more to this story than we understand.
Wasn't there, I could be misremembering, but wasn't there news when there was that big silicon shortage earlier this year that Nintendo was looking to move away from their AMD stuff? So is this just kind of like a follow-up to that from their AMD source chips that they were using?
It would probably be, I think this is more of reacting to the needs of developers, and to stay, they can't make a handheld system that is going to play at 4K. You know what I mean? Like you can't just. It's not going to happen.
I don't know. I don't think there's a chance that even if they put out a Switch Pro that they'll have a way to do 4K natively, especially if it's handheld.
What's the point? You know, that like my whole thing is like, if a developer is making a game that is in 4K, they still have to make it worse than 4K. They still have to make it 720.
Yeah.
And then the hardware will upscale it. So you're still going to have to downgrade whatever you're creating for Switch, because Switch is going to do some voodoo behind the scenes to make it look better. So I think this is a smoke and mirrors thing, less of a, I don't know, like a true power, you know, oh, we're actually going to jump into 4K gaming. I think it's going to be way less than that. But if our games look nicer from Nintendo, yeah, great. And they don't have to be so power hungry. Awesome. But you're not getting, you know, you're not going to get Cyberpunk, you know, you're not going to get, well, nobody is getting Cyberpunk, but you know, you're not getting Starlink. You're not going to be getting these games. We're lucky. We're legitimately lucky that we were able to get like The Witcher and, you know, I mean, look at Apex, man.
And even all those games just severely underperform on that console versus even like a base PS4 and OG Xbox One. Like, those games look like garbage.
it's a weird position for them to be in, because they want to be part of the conversation. These are multi-platform games a lot of the times that they're trying to, you know, figure out a way to get on their systems, and we're dangerously close to getting into another, wait, you're getting the Batman game from two Batman games ago on your system, like with the Wii U. Like, that's where we're going to be at very soon.
Exactly.
But if, you know, the big games are coming out on mobile, on Samsung refrigerators, and, you know, like Fortnite's everywhere. If that's what they're worried about, like a better performing Fortnite, cool. Yeah, cool. A better performing Apex, cool. But you're not getting like Resident Evil 8 in 4K. You're getting Resident Evil 8 in 720p if you do. And then the handheld is going to figure something out. But that's going to be, again, that's going to be up to the developers to make something scaled down like that. Or they just port it out. Or they just say, hey, here, we'll pay you to port this to make this look like a potato and let the Switch make it not look like a potato. I don't know. That's the stuff that that's like, that's straight up magic. That's voodoo. Like, that's all the stuff that, like, I will never understand ever.
Yeah.
Not even if there was a fire.
It'll be interesting to see what this does, though. We'll keep an eye on this.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. All right. Tell me what we got about Game Pass. You got some stats for me.
Yeah. Last item here.
Hey, everyone.
So an Xbox executive, Sarah Bond, who was on incredible Twitter follow and also great show, Spawn On Me podcast, back in November. She reiterated some of the things that she kind of loosely talked about on that podcast to Forbes this week, around Game Pass user numbers and things like that. So some of the key highlights here is people who subscribe to Game Pass spend 20% more time playing games. They end up playing 30% more games in 40% more genres, and they spend 20% more money on gaming overall.
Compared to what?
So, compared to non-Game Pass subscribed Xbox users.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So, I think these numbers are really telling. Like, it's showing that Game Pass is actually driving more revenue, and they're getting people to spend more because of Game Pass, whether it's buying DLC for the games that are on there or buying additional games because they're familiar with the storefront and they're already in the ecosystem. But I know that was a major concern for a lot of people because they pointed to the Netflix model and said subscription services can never be profitable. And she makes it very clear later on in this interview that they don't consider Game Pass to be similar to Netflix at all, and that it's a totally different subscription style and way of driving revenue. And I think these numbers show that.
Yeah, it also is telling of just, you know, how the consumers of the Xbox brand have changed. You know, when given the choice to pay $15, I mean, of course you're going to play more genre, right? Like, you're way more likely to get out of your comfort zone and try new things if all these things are are at your disposal. And you know, part of that revenue thing, I could tell you right now, are things like battle passes, costumes. Like, if you look at Rocket Arena. Like, Rocket Arena has it has a Game Pass version, or you could pay $20 and unlock, like, all of the whatever characters. I forget what it is that you unlock, but you could get, like, all the stuff. And I know several people personally that were like, I like this game enough, and they hit the $20, you know? But it's like, it's like a really great way to introduce people to stuff that they don't wouldn't normally do. It's like going to the, and it came at a perfect time too. It hit zenith when everyone's fucking at home and they can't go and look at the back of a box and ask the GameStop employee, is this game good? And you just be like, dude, just pay $15 and figure it out. Like, see if the game, see if you think the game is good. And then you can just move on. And that's something that I always thought was missing from the gaming industry. But I, you know, they took it to the, to the touchdown. Like, they make these games wholly available. But I was always thinking every game should have a demo. Every single game should have a demo. It just should. Yeah. You should be able to press play and play the first hour or so of a game and see if you like it. And technically, there are ways you could do that. You could refund the game, yada, yada. But, like, for the most part, it doesn't work that way. And it's a proven fact that if you have a demo for a game, people are more likely to buy the game if it's a good game. If you're putting out a shitty demo, it's a different story. But, like, you get more people interested if they could get their hands on it. That's why people, that's why these companies go to trade shows. It's why they get games in people's hands at PAX and E3 and CES. That's why they do this. That's why they don't just show you a video and then say, all right, it's out tomorrow. Like, only very few games could do that, and they establish a reputation first. But you have to get these games into people's hands, and Game Pass is a brilliant way to do that. It also allows Microsoft's development to take more chances. Just look at blanking on the name. The Honey I Shrunk the Kids one. What the hell is it called? the backyard one where you're the little where you're shrunk down.
Yeah.
Grounded. Yeah.
Grounded. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm just completely blanked. Just look at Grounded. Like you wouldn't see an early access thing like that, especially for this far out from like a quote unquote full release, getting constant updates like that. Game Pass allows mm-hmm. them to do that. They get a piece of the revenue. Yep. They get some share in there. They could see their numbers, whether they're growing or stagnating. They could, and it's just like, it's just a really, really cool way of doing things. So, you know, kudos. I hope they do make money because it'll show other companies who may remain nameless, they can do it too. So
whatever.
All right.
The only other big one here mm-hmm. is they highlighted the same number that they shared back in January of 18 million total subscribers to Xbox Game Pass, which is huge.
Big number, big time numbers. All right. Let's kick it to our chat. Chat, if you have anything you want to say, please write a question and then your question in the chat. We'll get to those. But in the meantime, we're going to go to the question of the week in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/DS podcasts, which you can answer. Just join the podcast group and I post it every single week. This week's question was, if you were an NPC in an RPG, okay, that's a non-playable character in a role-playing game, nice. What quest would you give out? My sister-in-law, Maggie Glass, says because she was really confused. She doesn't play video games. She just supports me by being in our Facebook groups.
So kind.
Burger says, drops gum on the ground. Pick that up for me. Easy quest. That's an easy 150 XP right there, Taylor.
Totally.
Corey has actually dialogue here, so I'm going to read this real quick. My friend Joseph Priestley is stuck on a hill. Please go to Nintendo and fix the Joy-Cons. Maybe then you can talk to him about coming back down from the hill. Okay. That's an little inside baseball. Joseph is always yelling about Joy-Con drift. Former writer for the website here, Thorne, says, the filler one that happens in the final stretch of the game. I could use the magic, yes, but I need 200 axolotl tails.
Okay. Axolotl, Steve.
Axolotl, whatever. Who the hell knows? There we go. Missed Enough, a.k.a. Matt Murray, also friend of the show, contributor as well, artist, all that fun stuff. Even
occasional contributor.
Occasional contributor, yes. Yes, still waiting on his Nintendo article that he promised when the Switch came out. This is, he titled his quest called How Dry I Am. And he says, I'm in search of a very rare, potentially magical bottle of whiskey and have tasked you with finding it. The only payment you'll get is a small amount of silver and a shot from that bottle. I like it. Yep. Billy the Door says, bring me the tendies, adventurer. Chicken tendies. Mm. Wants them tendies, bro.
Nice. Good call, Billy. I love that.
CT Dub says, I'd be more likely to be a blacksmith, so a quest for whatever material I need to craft the best sword that I could. Ooh. I love a good blacksmith quest, Taylor. Give me this ingot.
Oh, yeah?
Give me this ingot, and I'll make you the sword. And Crafty Gamer Lady says, go to the tippy top of the highest mountain and almost die of frostbite so you can get the bluest magical flower in existence. Then I'll show you how to dye your clothes with it. Very good.
Nice.
Very good stuff.
If I was an NPC, I would be the one that does the cooking game tutorial. Like, first 2 hours of the game, you walk into the first town. Like, hey, come over to this pot of stew. Let me show you how to cook.
Yeah.
That would be me.
I would okay, I know exactly what I'd be. I would be locked out of my house. And I would need you to get into my house and unlock the door for me. Full stop. That's it. And then I'd invite you over.
Or your wife would be locked out of the house. And the quest is to get your attention to let her in.
I'm just sleeping. You need to find like a magical instrument to wake me up. All right, let's see. What do we got? Let's scroll up. Let's see if we got any questions. I don't see anything.
Buzz has a good reminder.
Yes.
This Friday at noon Eastern time, mm-hmm. ID at Xbox is going to have over 100 games that they're showcasing. So definitely check that out. We will recap that on next week's show.
Miss Envy says, how about the face shooty guy in Borderlands 2? Shoot me in the face! That's a great one.
That's a good one.
That's a great
one. That's
a good one. BP Dub says, remember Gamefly? Yeah. Yeah. I had Gamefly. The problem was I always forgot to give the game back.
There you go. I was a subscriber to Gamefly until April of last year, Steve. I think that that is actually a pretty decent service. And if you haven't had Gamefly in a while, this is not an ad. Give it a try. Shipping times were actually much faster for me near the tail end of my experience with them than they were initially. I had been with them for like 3-4 years, something like that. So,
Mikey Kerr says, I'd be that guy who asks you for your help to prove myself as a brave warrior and then die humorously.
Ah, nice.
And I think that's it. I think that's what we got. Well, Miss Envy says, question, we gaming tonight, bro? I don't know. We'll see. All right. Where the hell are we now? We didn't have a hype zone tonight, but that's okay. Andy usually takes care of the hype zone. We didn't have anything in the mailbag this week. So that's going to bring us to the end of the show. But ladies and gentlemen, if you want to email us and talk to us, it's easy. feedback@ndspodcast.com, or you can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/DS podcasts. And if you support us on Patreon, just at the $1 tier, you get into our super secret VIP Discord, where we talk all day about video games, because it's a cool place to chill and hang out. And it's really, really, really active. Like, more active than I think it's ever been. And it's awesome.
Agreed.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at @duel_screens. Our Instagram is @duelscreens. I am @batchout27. Andy is @pantsguy. And Taylor over here is @itsperger. You could follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/duelscreenstreams. I am on Twitch at twitch.tv/batchild. And Taylor is twitch.tv/itsperger. You sound like you want to say something. What do you want to say?
Oh, no. I was just saying bye to everyone.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yes. Please, again, go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button. Check out our shows at the end of the week, because we have fantastic shows. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you, listeners. Fuck you, Andy. And as always, please be excellent to each other.